Penguin Random House Canada presents A Nation's Paper, The Globe and Mail in the Life of Canada. Edited by John Ibbotson. Read for you by Sterling Jarvis and Emily Nixon.
An Introduction to the History Project. At its heart, the Globe and Mail is a contract between readers and journalists built on trust. That relationship has helped us thrive. You are listening to the Globe and Mail's most ambitious undertakings. 30 essays involving dozens of writers, editors, researchers, and designers that explore the role this newspaper has played in the progress of our nation since George Brown founded the Globe 180 years ago. Our goal was not to write a history of Canada or a history of the Globe and Mail. Instead, we searched for issues and events in which the paper intersected with the life of the country, influencing its course. The essays that have been published by the Globe throughout 2024 and that are contained in this book seek to illustrate that principle. But which issues? Which events? Our readers helped with that, sending in many dozens of suggestions when we first announced this project in the spring of 2022. Deputy Editor Sinclair Stewart, a team of departmental editors, and I came up with the 30 topics and matched them with writers. In some cases, we asked journalists who were deeply familiar with the subject to provide us with an essay. So Gary Mason, who has written extensively on environmental issues, wrote on how the Globe has covered the environment through the decades, while Conrad Jakubowski, who is based in Montreal, wrote about our coverage of Quebec during years of constitutional negotiations and referendums. In other instances, we sought fresh eyes and perspectives. Anne Hui gave us a thoughtful essay on the Catholic-Protestant tensions that dominated political and social life through much of the country's history. Evan Annett offered insight into how Sir Wilfrid Laurier and Sir John Willison, the Globe's editor at the turn of the last century, worked out a solution, however imperfect, to the crisis over the use of French in Manitoba schools. Jana G. Pruden told us about Kit Coleman of the Mail, Sarah Jeanette Duncan of the Globe, and Faith Fenton of the Empire, three pioneering women journalists of the Gilded Age in the late 1800s, who broke out of the so-called women's pages to cover, among other things, the Klondike Stampede and the Spanish-American War. Vanmala Subramaniam told the story of the Great General Motors Strike of 1937, in which the Globe's editorials backed the losing side. Though we limited ourselves to 30 essays, we could easily have written 30 more. An essay on how the Globe covered the social upheavals of the 1960s would have been welcome. David Parkinson wrote a splendid piece on how publisher George McCullough fought and lost a battle with the censors during the Second World War. But there was room for another essay on the paper's role in the conscription crises, and one of the most delightful moments in the Globe's history, when dance critic John Fraser helped renowned Russian ballet star Mikhail Baryshnikov defect after a performance at Toronto's O'Keeffe Center in June 1974, didn't manage to make it into an essay. The Globe and Mail has been deeply involved in both the good days and the bad days of this country's progress. George Brown and his paper envisioned a future for British North America that would stretch from sea to sea to sea, and helped realize that vision. His paper was also at times anti-French, anti-Irish, and anti-Catholic. But Brown and the Globe matured together, eventually embracing a more accommodating vision for the new dominion. In times of war and peace, the paper has fought for a free and independent press, open borders, a market economy, and a compassionate society. We are at our best as a paper and as a country when we champion such principles. But Willow Fidler's essay showed that even though the Globe ran stories as far back as the early 1900s detailing unsafe and unhealthy conditions endured by indigenous children at residential schools, the paper only started giving those schools and other indigenous issues proper investigative coverage in the 1980s. Dakshana Bhaskaramurthy told us about the paper's blinkered approach to Africville in Nova Scotia. Patrick White explained why it took so long for the Globe to understand the people and lands of the North. Kelly Kreiderman examined the sometimes strained relationship between the Globe and Western Canada. Elizabeth Renzetti wrote that the paper often championed the cause of women everywhere but in its own newsroom. The paper grew along with the country it covered. Tamir Durrani explored how the Globe took advantage of technological advances from the telegraph to satellites to the internet to become an ever more national paper. Marcia Lederman wrote that the Globe has a solid, though not unblemished, tradition of supporting immigration and racial diversity, while Rachel Giza revealed that Pierre Trudeau was stealing from a Globe editorial when he said that the state has no place in the bedrooms of the nation. Of course, there is far more to the newspaper than news. Cathal Kelly explained why sports writers love to make predictions and don't worry if they're wrong. Barry Hertz delivered a moving tribute to film critic Jay Scott. Tony Keller and Cliff Lee each wrote about the inner workings of the paper. Tony told readers about Junius, the guiding spirit of the editorial board, while Cliff gave us a delightful exploration of letters to the editor. Finally, Ian Brown meditated on which is more unlikely, that such an improbable country as Canada somehow succeeded, or that the Globe somehow succeeded in covering it. We offered each writer, all of whom are present or former Globe staff, 2 weeks to research their topic, conduct interviews, and complete a polished essay of about 2,500 words. What fools we were. Some writers started their essays when the winter snow was still on the ground and completed them as the autumn leaves began to fall. Yet somehow, over the course of a year, everyone came through, often working away on their essays, even as they completed other assignments on their beats. Also, we were saved by news researcher Stephanie Chambers. The first stop for most essayists was the editorial library, where Stephanie unfailingly provided indispensable research materials. She and her colleague Rick Cash mined the paper's archives and located reams of other material. We quickly came to realize that without the editorial library's contribution, this project would have failed. I first proposed a series of essays based on the Globe's history to David Walmsley, the paper's editor-in-chief, in a phone call in August 2021. I had barely gotten into my pitch before David started riffing on possible essay topics. He took my subsequent memorandum to then-publisher Philip Crawley, who greenlit the project on the spot. Philip and David backed our writers and editors through thick and thin. After Philip retired in August 2023, David and Andrew Saunders, who succeeded Philip as CEO, shepherded the project to completion. Nancy Janovicic, professor of history at the University of Calgary, agreed to come on board as consulting historian, and she proved to be invaluable, offering insight and enlightenment to essayists who consulted her. We are also indebted to the University of Toronto, which made its libraries available to our writers. To Information Services Manager Craig Butosi and Deputy Chief Librarian Julie Hannaford, our sincere thanks. Tamar Satov edited the essays, demonstrating her abilities as one of Canada's finest editors time and again. Sandra E. Martin took over from Sylvia Steed as supervising editor when Sylvia retired in June 2023. Photo editors Liz Sullivan and Solana Kane guided the search for images to complement the essays. Many Globe editors worked countless hours to help polish the manuscript.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?